You are listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball, a podcast by fans from the iubase.com website for anyone wanting more info on Indiana University baseball. Today is Monday, March 4th, 2019. I am Carl James, joined by stats guru Cassidy Palmer, the fan who wears red pants on Sundays, Chris Feeney, and the creator of iubase.com, Josh Bennett. The Hoosiers answered the Tennessee sweep by going on a four-game winning streak until Coastal Carolina walked off on the Hoosiers with three runs in the bottom of the ninth on Sunday. The Hoosiers opened the home portion of the season with two midweek games against Cincinnati and Butler. Then Indiana traveled to Conway, South Carolina. Friday was rained out, setting up a Saturday doubleheader against Northeastern and UConn, with the Hoosiers sweeping the day. All told, a 4-1 week was a strong bounce back from the sweep in Tennessee, who, by the way, still have not lost on the year. Well, with five games against five opponents, we do have quite a bit to talk about. So let's get started with our Hoosier highlights. Cass, what are your highlights for the week?
Well, for me, there were so many highlights throughout the week. When you win four straight, there are going to be a lot of highlights. But two that really stood out to me from the Coastal Carolina game were, the first one came when Cal Kruger took the mound with bases loaded in just a bad situation, errors, free passes, bases loaded. It was chaos. He comes in, cleans up the mess with the bases loaded strikeout. That, especially at the time, was huge. We were just down one against Coastal. So that was the first thing that caught my attention. The second one came later in the game when Drew Ashley fought back from that 0-2 count, fouled off a bazillion pitches to get it back to 2-2 before getting the RBI single to tie up the game. I mean, those are the kind of at-bats that we need to see in those situations. So it was great to see Drew do that. Those were the two big things that stood out to me as just big grit highlights. So Josh, what are you thinking? What were your highlights?
Thanks, Cass. My Hoosier highlight is seeing something that we've all been waiting for since the opener down in Memphis. And we actually got to see it on two separate occasions on Saturday. That would be hitting the double-digit mark for hits in a game. I know we were all keeping track of that. And in the first game against Northeastern, the Hoosiers were excellent at the plate with 10 hits to go along with two walks. And probably more important to me anyway is only four Ks. Gorski and Kalitha had two hits apiece, and Ashley reached base twice and scored two runs. In game two against the Huskies, the strikeouts were back, but they managed to stay under 10 while walking four times and adding 11 hits. Again, Gorski had a multi-hit game. He's just been amazing. So much fun to watch. And this time he was joined by Jeremy Houston and Drew Ashley, who actually reached base three times for the game, as did Cole Barr. Ashley is really fitting to that two spot nicely. Just a really good offensive day for the Hoosiers, and really good to see that on Saturday. So what's your highlight for the week, Chris?
Okay, for me, it might not be so much an offensive highlight or a defensive highlight, but it was just getting back to the BART. And actually, you know what? The highlight will be the addition of the February games. Let's put it that way. Because after, you know, tomorrow being canceled, we'd be waiting all the way to Canisius to even get in the building. And to get the two games in February, it was great to be back. To see the guys out there. Gorski starting the season off with a bomb. Then, you know, the next day, down 2-0, he gets the green light. Another just big highlight moments, too. The heaters up in the walkways there, that's a highlight, too, for me from the BART. And also seeing Logan Sowers, Brian Hobby, Timmy Heron, all coming back to watch the guys play before. I know Logan and Timmy were headed out for their spring trainings, and Brian, I guess he had a day off of work or whatever the case, and it was real good to see them. And, you know, just being back in the building, you know, seeing the Bullhawk statue was there, the kid, B-Town Denny's kid was there, Just seeing everybody, the faces you see only at the ballpark. It's a great place to watch a game. And I'm just glad it's back open and rolling, man. Especially, like I said, with tomorrow's cancellation, we'd be waiting a whole nother 10 days to even get in there. So whoever decided on February games, they're going to get my Hoosier highlight. What about you, Carl?
For me, I'm actually going to go with Wyatt Cross's home run against UConn. I think we've looked at this. It's important, especially with so many doubleheaders this year, that Ryan Feinman get an opportunity to take a break behind the plate. And Wyatt, you know, struggled to start off the year. And to see him come up in a key spot to tie the game, to run the starting pitcher, and then basically give an opportunity for the team to start hitting against the bullpen, that was a huge, huge highlight for me. Was Wyatt Cross's home run. Well, with four wins on the week, there were a lot of standout plays. Chris, who earned this week's belts?
All right. Thanks, Carl. There really was. Again, four to five wins. We'll do that, Carl. You're right. Now, what we're going to do for the defensive web gem, the defensive red belt, is going to go to Logan Kalaita for that play in the right center field gap. Coach Mercer had tweeted out after the game that he had him set up in the left center field gap, but he still got over there and made that outstanding grab. So Logan picks up a defensive red belt. For the offensive red belt, I mean, this one's pretty obvious. If you hit three home runs in a week, a solo bomb, a two-run bomb, a three-run bomb, a grand slam, you hit 400, Matt Gorski's easily getting the offensive red belt. This one's not too hard to put together. Now, for the pitching red belt of the week, I know we had said that the Northeastern game wouldn't count towards the red belts due to live stats only. But you know what? Live stats proved to me that Paulie Milto gets it. I didn't need audio or video for that. Indiana University decides to do what they do as far as hoping the other team provides audio or video coverage. We struck out that day, but Paulie Milto didn't, and he pitched great to start a doubleheader. I have it here. Total was six hits and three runs, but before that eighth inning, it was two hits and no runs. So he really helped out the staff. You know, we were already pitching, five games in 6 days or whatever it was. Then you're set up for a doubleheader that you didn't expect. And who shows up and who steps up and who helps us? Of course, it's Uncle Paulie. So I really like that highlight of him with the 3-0 green light. Whoever caught that video, I think his name is Matt Holland, actually. I do know who caught that video. That was hysterical. But, you know, he was already a star from that video. And then Paulie picks up a red belt for his pitching so I guess that was early Saturday. It was really, really needed. It opened up the bullpen for UConn. It gave us more options for Sunday against Coastal. Now, we didn't see one freshman pitcher hit the mound, but for the ones who did, you know, it really opened up the staff. So Paulie stepped up. And for this week, that would give Logan Kalaita defensive, Matt Gorski offensive, and Paulie Milto the pitching red belt of the week. Let's see now. We have to wrap that up for the belts and see what happens next.
Oh, it's mail. Mail time. Mail time. Okay. We got mailbag time. To start off with, we've got, I'll hand this one over to Josh. So Josh, Patrick McGraw asks, and he's talking about the Coastal Carolina game, why not go to Matt Lloyd in the ninth inning?
Well, thanks for the question, Patrick. To answer that, I think we need to go back to late in the second game on Saturday when we let the Huskies back in the game and had to use Matt for two innings. I'm sure that wasn't the preference or the plan. The bad thing was that it took him 47 pitches to finish the game. And previously in the season, he'd only pitched one inning. So I'm guessing that probably meant after 47 pitches that he was probably off limits for Sunday. And even if he wasn't off limits, Mercer had a fresh Connor Maness to call on, who's been really good to start the season. Before the ninth yesterday, he had a line of eight innings pitched, four hits, two walks, and only two earned runs given up. I had no issue at all with Connor getting the call in that spot, and I'm also good with Sloan coming into a really tough spot. He was really strong on Saturday, and he threw 13 fewer pitches than Matt did. I honestly think that that decision in that scenario was made probably late Saturday night, but most certainly before the game even started on Sunday, with what I just said. We didn't like the result, but completely understand the thought process and decision making behind it. So, Cass, next question goes to you. Franklin has a question that's right up your alley. He asks, in the past, the Chick-fil-A K-Tracker promo had been a sandwich for 6 strikeouts and a meal for 10. This season, they've upped the sandwich to 9 and the meals to 12. Can you give us a breakdown on just how those numbers would have changed the payouts last season?
Yep. So under the old rules for last year, there were 11 games with 6 strikeouts and 11 games with 10 strikeouts. So even split between the two. And there were actually only 4 home games that had fewer than 6 strikeouts. So only 4 games didn't get chicken. Under these new rules, there would have been 14 with 9 strikeouts, so 14 sandwiches. There were only 3 home games with at least 12 strikeouts. So you're still getting 17 free food, but it's just staying more toward those sandwiches. And there were actually 10 home games with fewer than those 9 strikeouts. So there's still a good bit of free food to be had, just not quite as much. I also want to note that so far, Iuoli has hit that 9K mark twice total this season. Once in the first game against Tennessee and once against Cincinnati. Last season, IU had 25 games with at least 9 strikeouts total, not just home games. But through this point in the season, through 3 weekends, they only had 2 of those as well. So there could still be a good bit of chicken to be had this year. So Chris, we got a question from Keegan. When will we see, or should I say hear, more radio or audio broadcast of IU baseball by actual Indiana University people? Big thanks to the other schools for having live broadcasts, but I want to hear IU guys talk about IU players and IU games. So what do you think, Chris?
Okay. I mean, it was obviously a big issue this weekend because Indiana University has been rolling the dice all season, and, you know, this weekend, the first time they came up, no good. And Friday, there was no coverage whatsoever, except for the live stats. So, Keegan, I understand. And we could have used 5 other people's questions for this because it was coming in, you know, plenty of ways. But, Keegan, we know you, so we wanted to put you up there. But it's a decision that Indiana University makes. They rely on the other guys. I mean, I don't know how much more to really explain it. Greg Murray's our baseball guy. He's also our women's basketball guy for the university. And that gets priority on the radio. So he's going to be working those games. And then when women's basketball wraps up, he'll slide over to his baseball role, which he is excellent. He's one of the best in the conference. I hope he stays because I could see him with a bright, bright future ahead of him as far as broadcasting, of course. But it's just a decision that IU makes. And is it annoying? Is it, come on, we're going to really rely on other teams? We're a Power 5 conference. We're a big-time baseball program. Yeah, that's the choice they've made. And there's really no way around it. That's just how it is. Now, I know in the past we had Roger Radio, we had Roger Rodehaver, so it didn't really come up as much because they would play this Russian roulette with the other team. And if it didn't work out right, Roger would help us out. But he was doing that on his own. You know what I mean? He was doing that for fun. He was doing that on top of his job. I mean, think about it. It would be like the 7th inning. He'd be like, hold on, I got to order the spread for the postgame. And then it would go mute for a little while. And then he'd be like, all right, I hope he comes back soon. And then he would come back and he'd be like, all right, here's what you missed.
And there was security. Remember security?
You never know. You didn't know what would happen. Remember when the lady stole his chair because he got up and he had to go get his chair back? And then what about the kids in Florida Atlantic offering him drinks? That was the best. Yep. But Roger
passed. And then always out by that alligator pond.
Yes, yes. So we were very lucky to have Roger doing what he did. But he's gone. You know what I'm saying? He's in Starkville, and I'm sure he's not doing radio there. He's plenty more busy. But, I mean, I don't know the exact dates. And obviously, it depends on how well women's basketball does, whether they end up in the NCAA in a deep run or maybe the NIT in a deep run. But I know what Greg does do is he'll mix and match. Like he did the second game at the BART, right? He did that. He didn't do the home opener because he had something else. That was a little strange, too, that we didn't have radio for the home opener in our own ballpark. But again, that's an Indiana University decision. And luckily, Cincinnati had a broadcast, so I was able to send that out. I have reached out to our three opponents for this weekend. Oregon State got back to me. They will have a radio broadcast. There is nothing on Washington's website or San Diego's, and they haven't gotten back to me yet. Hopefully, they will have something. But, you know, it's annoying. It's frustrating, but it is what it is. It's an Indiana University decision. They have chosen to do this, to rely on other teams and see what happens. So, Cass, I'm going to kick it right back to you for some stats for the week.
Okay, so the first thing that stood out to me, out of the five games that IU played, three of those had single-digit strikeouts. That is a huge turnaround. The Cincy game, the Northeastern game, and the UConn game all had single digits. And in fact, the Hoosiers had fewer strikeouts in the five games this past week than they did in the three against Tennessee. So that's probably a mix of Tennessee looks like the real deal so far this season, and IU always comes out of the gate with lots of strikeouts. So put those two things together, and it probably exaggerated the strikeout issue and made it look worse than it probably is. Also on the offensive side, the team hit 269 for the week and 299 on the weekend. That's a huge jump from the 160s, 180s they were hitting the first couple of weeks. They also have not been as reliant on the extra base hits. It was 38% for the full week, 31% for the weekend of the hits went for extra bases. And overall, that's a good thing. It means that we're hitting run, we're moving them around. We're more focused on that than always having to hit that long ball. So having that a little more spread out, a little more diverse is a good thing. Sounds weird to say fewer extra base hits is a good thing, but in the long run, it really, really is. I also noticed that the pitching staff gave up fewer than five earned runs in each game, with Cincy and Butler getting just one earned run each off of the pitching staffs. That's also a really, really good sign. The opposite of that is IU's defense was responsible for seven unearned runs this week, including some pretty big situations. So that's one thing that IU's going to have to look out for.
We had five errors in one game. Is that right, Cass?
What?
We had five errors in one game, right? Was that
yes, and if I remember right, there were no unearned runs in that game.
Amazing.
No, there were. There were three unearned runs.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
Yes, three unearned runs in the five-error game that IU managed to win.
That's the thing. We played with fire both days, really, with the errors and the walks and everything. Yeah. We just kind of got lucky on late Saturday.
Well, and in a bizarre looking at it now, stat, I have my scorecards right in front of me because I've learned better at this point. In the UConn game, the IU pitchers actually threw about 30 more pitches than the UConn pitchers did, which is kind of backward from what you'd expect in a game that IU won 9-6. But yeah, that just stood out to me while looking at the five errors. There's definitely been some sloppiness early this season. I'm hoping it's a little bit of same with the strikeouts. The early season tends to be a little sloppier than the rest of the season will be. So, Carl, what's happened around the country this week in college baseball?
Well, I'm going to start with Illinois. And it's a really good look at Illinois because Illinois was in Conway with Indiana playing the same opponents. And Illinois went into that having just been ranked by D1 Baseball. So they had Coastal, Northeastern twice, and Connecticut. So they played one extra game. But even if you just take off the second Northeastern game, Illinois went 1-2 on the weekend, while Indiana went 2-1. So you look at that comparison right there. Indiana had a better weekend. Well, then you add the fact that Illinois went and played another game against Northeastern and lost that one as well. So Illinois went 1-3 on the weekend after, you know, making some noise early in the season and impressing a lot of the media that actually saw them up close and personal. So by no means am I saying, I mean, it could have been a bad week for them. But I mean, I think Illinois is a talented baseball team. But, at this point, they're human. Michigan's human too. Michigan, although they did win they won their series at Cal State Northridge, they did drop the Sunday game. So they have finally lost a game. Michigan still has the best record in the Big Ten at 8-1. The other team that we kind of thought might that went into the week undefeated was Penn State, and then went to play Duke, which is no slouch. And indeed they scored no runs against the All-American starting pitcher for Duke, but they did win the middle game, so they avoided a sweep against ACC Duke, who is 9-2 overall. So they've given Penn State's given one of the two losses, so that's somewhat impressive. So Penn State might not be a complete pushover this year, and we may be looking at a bit more parity in the Big Ten. Maybe not a huge, big top strength going on, but we might see some real serious competition going on throughout the league. Now, if we look at the two teams that Indiana plays four times, meaning they have a really big impact on the RPI, Canisius has been struggling. They're only at 3-7, and they had another rough weekend. But the big surprise are the Evansville Aces, who only won 11 games in all of last season. They are now up to 5-5 on the year. So they're almost halfway to their win total from last season already. They did it, they did it with by winning two games against Boston College this past weekend. So, pretty impressive from that perspective. So a lot of these things may look like they're all kind of balancing themselves out. We were expecting Canisius to be better. We were expecting Evansville to be worse. We were expecting Tennessee to be worse. So hopefully maybe those things will actually add up more. There'll be more of the Tennessees and Evansville's, and the strength of schedule may turn out to be a little bit stronger overall. And that's what the hope is. But obviously still lots of baseball to go. The Big Ten Conference, I'm not sure. It could be very, very, very interesting. Well, as much as we would like to see baseball at the BART this week, that's not going to happen. The Indiana State game has been postponed. And they did say that the next game for sure would be Seattle. So that means it's not postponed to Wednesday. It's postponed to another week. So we'll keep an eye on that schedule to see if they manage to get that game rescheduled. A highlight of the 2019 schedule is approaching, though, this coming weekend. The Hoosiers will travel to Seattle, Washington to play three games in a tournament at T-Mobile Park, assuming the name doesn't change between now and Friday. It can always happen. Chris, IUBase.com writer Max Heath did some digging into the competition, and I think you've got his notes. So what can you tell us about this weekend?
Okay, thanks, Carl. I do have the notes. As far as the schedule, we have Friday is going to be a 10 p.m. game Eastern time against Washington. Of course, they were returning from the College World Series. On Saturday, we have March 9th, Oregon State, 6 p.m. Eastern. National champions. And then on Sunday, March 10th, we're going to go against the University of San Diego, who we played last year. Carl knows them well as far as RPI busters. That's going to be 2 p.m. Eastern. And then looking at Max's preview, Washington is currently 7-2. Okay. And like I had mentioned, they were featured in the College World Series last year. Now, it looks like their big hitter is Nick Cale. Okay, he's hitting .444. He already has 12 hits and 2 bombs with 14 RBIs. He is a junior catcher, and he has a .575 on base percentage so far. He's going to be a tough out for us, I would think. But again, anybody on that team is going to be a big hitter. We're just mentioning one. These lineups are going to be no joke this weekend, I would think. Now, as far as Oregon State, the defending national champions, they were part of the undefeated list there just until recently. They lost their last game to, I believe it was the Mountaineers of West Virginia. So they're 10-1. And, you know, I wouldn't say that's a slump. It's one loss. And they're going to play Friday, and then they'll play us on Saturday. Their big hitter is Adley Rutschman, you know, nationally known, of course. He most outstanding player last year. And I'd say he's starting this year pretty good. He's got 5 bombs, 12 RBIs, and he's hitting .343. And again, this is
another catcher. Don't run on him either.
Oh, no. he'll shut down a running game pretty quick. As far as Oregon State, any arm they put out there is going to be outstanding. The back end of the bullpen could start in the Big Ten. You know what I'm saying? The middle reliever, who they don't use too much, would start on Sunday or Saturday in the Big Ten. So this is going to be a test for both of these clubs. For the third game, it's going to be the San Diego Toreros. They're 8-3, Carl. They have 8 wins already going towards that RPI. That can't hurt, right?
I'll talk to me in April.
Yeah. Well, then that leads to this. They finished 23-32 last year. They did not make the tournament. We took 3 out of 4 from them. It was a pretty testy series, if you remember. As the series started, Roger Radio was actually going on, and I remember him mentioning that they were a little chirpy. They had a little Maryland in them, if I remember. They had some mouths on them, and they ended up getting pretty quiet by the end of the weekend, but it was a testy, testy weekend, so it could get a little chippy out there. It's a little bit of a revenge game, obviously, for them, and if I remember right, we could have swept that whole thing. Like the game we lost was a tight game as well. We could have went out there and took all 4, and they were coming off. They were nationally ranked then. They were playing well. We might have sent them in a tailspin. I don't know exactly what happened with that. But
it was the Matt Lloyd bomb.
You put one on the roof, it'll mess up your whole season, right? Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. their big hitter, it looks like, is going to be Reyes Ripken. He is hitting .333. He has 2 doubles, 2 triples, and 10 RBIs so far. So one thing we want to mention about this weekend also, the Seattle, I guess officially it's called the IUAA of Seattle, the chapter. This is the alumni group out in Seattle. I spoke with, I want to get his name correct, Scott Manning, who's the president of the chapter. And I put some stuff on the website about a get-together they're doing. They're going to be meeting at Sluggers between 12 noon and 2:30 for free appetizers and free drinks. They're also going to have plenty of giveaways available. And then, of course, head over to the IU Oregon State game. That's 2:30 Pacific time, so be ready for that. That's the 2:30. That's when it ends because the game's at 3. So you go right over to the ball game. Kids are welcome at Sluggers prior to 9 p.m. So this is a family affair. This is a family environment. Bring anybody. It should be a fun time. Now, as far as the tickets, if you're going, this is a pay one price event, and there's 3 games a day. So it is $30 a day, but you get 3 games. That's for a reserve seat near the dugouts. But you can go $15 general admission and get all 3 games every day. And that's what they're recommending you do as far as if you want to sit in the section with the alumni, because that's what they're all going to do. And then you can just kind of make your own section in the general admission. And it would be $15 for the whole day. You can watch some really good college baseball, not only cheer on the Hoosiers. So it really could be an outstanding weekend for us as far as the RPI, national recognition. I guess we'll be live statting at 2 out of 3 as of now. Whatever the case, we'll do the best we can to get the information out on these big, huge games. Oregon State, we do have the audio. We know that. So that's Saturday. I know I like to like make predictions and try to guess or say what we're supposed to do after these little series previews, but this one's rough, folks. Play well, play smart. Do not give up walks. Do not give up extra outs. Play good baseball. Represent Indiana well on a national stage. That's what I'm looking forward to. And you know what? I feel like if we pitch well and play well, the results will come. Give me some close ball games. You know, give me competitive, compete. I don't want to, what was that, Tennessee, 11-0 on that Saturday. None of that. Compete, play well, We'll see what the results come and take care of San Diego. Obviously, that's all about the first two games. Take care of San Diego. And that's pretty much it for this series. I just wanted to shout out to Max Heath. He wrote his first two game recaps. He did write this series preview that will be on the site Wednesday. He's doing a great job for us. Give him a follow. It's at @Max_Heath. When we have a home game, all the information coming out of the press box is going to be coming from him. I'll still send out like silly stuff and pictures and stuff about where we are as far as free chicken, but like the real updates are going to come from Max from that press box. We're going to kick it over to Josh for his final thought.
Thanks, Chris. I'm not at all that disappointed that the game against Indiana State is postponed on tomorrow, and glad that they didn't try to schedule it for Wednesday. This has been a grueling week and a half for the Hoosiers, getting back late on Sunday from Knoxville, turning around to play two midweeks on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then left that Thursday morning at 8 a.m. to travel to Myrtle. They played three games in 2 days for the second time this early in the season on Saturday, and didn't get back to Bloomington until 4 this morning. So all of this while also trying to make classes and keep up on their studies. So I'm sure they'll take advantage of this much-needed break while gearing up for a really tough series test this weekend that you just talked about, Chris. I don't think we as fans really understand how tough of a grind this is for these guys, but glad they can balance it, and I'm sure they'll take advantage of this break. So, Carl, what are your final thoughts?
I just really want to talk about the season so far, as far as the win-loss record goes. 6-5 is actually not that far off of my postseason predictions. In fact, my postseason predictions were at 7-4 at this point. Because I did not predict that they would win both midweek games. It's, you know, it's the fourth and fifth games of the week. It's just a lot of times you play, you get down to that. Just things happen. And that thing was really strong that they came back after that Tennessee series and won both of those games. So they actually made up a game that way. I expected them to win the Tennessee series, but you know, I didn't realize how good Tennessee was going to be. So honestly, I have nothing I'm really, you know, massively concerned about as far as the record goes. And in my postseason prediction, I actually only included one win in the coming weekend. So if the Hoosiers can take the improvements that they've made, you know, go out there and get a couple of big wins, they're going to be right back to where, you know, I thought they were going to be in position to get into the postseason. So I think that that's a huge opportunity. Well, with that, that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at @CU@TheBart and at @IUBase17. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. For Cassidy Palmer, Chris Feeney, and Josh Bennett, I am Carl James. See you at the BART.